You are entering the Royals Podcast Network.
A show that looks at Kansas City baseball's past, present, and future.
Belted to left field. Billy comes through tonight. Splash!
This is the Kansas City Baseball Vault.
That sound of heavy mouth breathing was not the return of Chris Kamler to our show.
No,
it was the sound of your dejected host Jeff Herr, I am defiantly bringing you a Kansas City Baseball Vault with the ever vigilant but currently despondent Michael Engel.
Yeah.
Mike, how's it? I'd ask you normally. This is where I usually ask how's it going, but I don't even know if that's worth. I don't know.
I had a ham sandwich for dinner.
That's a plus. It's not positive Monday, but we'll still say that's positive.
It's highlight of the day, I think, so far. Yeah.
And if you're, I don't know, if for some reason you happen to be tuning into this podcast but haven't followed the Royals the past week, perhaps you're wondering why we're so dejected, but it has to do with the Royals, who have lost six of their last eight and just got swept. You did hear that right. Swept.
At home
by the Houston Astros.
Yeah.
I said that once for each time they beat the Royals at Kauffman.
Thank God it wasn't for every run they scored against.
Oh, geez. We'd still be going.
Yeah.
That might just be the whole show. But the Houston Astros, who lost 111 games last year, the Houston Astros, who are 11 games below 500 now, and the Houston Astros, who over the last 3 years have averaged 108 losses per season, just swept the Royals and made them look silly. 21-4 was the total score, the aggregate score for the three games. And, you know, you didn't think it could get any worse than a 4-19 stretch last May. And it hasn't, record-wise, it hasn't been that bad. They're 10-15 in May this year. But, good God, it almost feels worse.
Yeah.
I mean, this organization likes to talk about, they wanted to, when people wanted to crow about last year still not being a success because they didn't make the world, or I'm sorry, they didn't make the playoffs, and Dayton Moore's over here talking about feeling like they just won the World Series, you know, and then the Royals wanted to downplay it by saying it's a step, you know. Well, I said it on this very show last year. I said, that's all well and good if you want to call it a step, but, you know, steps go somewhere. And unless you're at the top step, which is just won a World Series, you got to keep taking more steps. And right now, it doesn't look like the Royals have taken a step forward after last year, Michael Engel.
They, you know that scene in Home Alone where they're Harry and Marv.
This is already off to a great start.
Yeah, and Kevin McAllister throws the paint bucket down, you know, off the ledge, and hits him in the face, and that's the Royals right now. Is they're the guys getting hit in the face with the paint buckets by the 9-year-old kid.
My analogy that I was thinking of on the ride home was slightly more morbid, where imagining Ned Yost and Dayton Moore as John Travolta and Samuel L. Jackson in Pulp Fiction.
Oh God.
Being the splattered brains of one of their former compatriots in the back seat of their car. So
maybe the Royals need the wolf.
They do need the wolf.
But it is.
They absolutely need the wolf.
God.
George Springer is basically the wolf, but he plays for somebody else.
George Springer has more home runs in the last week than any Royals player has all year, and it's May 28th.
The Kansas City Royals.
He made his debut a month ago.
He didn't even start the season with the team. The Royals in Kauffman Stadium have played 27 games, including today, and they have hit 9 home runs. The Houston Astros.
Oh, does that count Brett Hayes' home run, his heroic first home run of the year? Doesn't matter. The point still stands. That you're gonna...
Did he hit a home run today?
He hit a home run.
I just saw on Twitter that I was not following the game purposely because I needed a cool down day.
Oh yeah,
and this was a good day since I was at work anyway. Yeah. I did check in on Twitter and I saw that Brett Hayes got a hit, but I did not realize it was a home run. Okay,
he got a single and then a home run. So
okay, so that's probably why I saw the hit first and then
he's just showing off now.
Because I tuned out the alerts on my phone and just dismissed them immediately once it got to like 7-1 or whatever it was.
That's a good idea.
But anyway, so I did not count that. So we'll boom, crank that up. So 27 games counting today, 10 home runs, and the Houston Astros in the last 3 games have hit 4. So in 1/9, that's 18%, right? No, that's not right. 12%, I think.
No,
I can't. I don't know where I have to top of my head. I'm going to do this. I'm an accountant. I should know this.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's a good thing you're not an accountant or anything.
11%. So, the Astros have played 11% the amount of games in Kauffman Stadium as the Royals have and hit 40% the amount of home runs. So, and I mean,
I guess the dome wasn't there for them.
I guess not. And I mean, George Springer hit a home run to center field. And, you know, that's where the dome, that's the epicenter of the dome. The Stephen King under the dome is there. And Ned got thrown out of the game yesterday. And that's actually why today is the, I don't even know what day it is. What's 28th?
Yeah.
28th. Today's the 28th. And when we're recording, and so when I say yesterday was the 27th, I was actually at that game. That's why we're recording on the 28th, because we pushed back a day for the holiday, and then I ended up going to the game on the 27th, where Jeremy Guthrie pitched beautifully.
Yeah, it got kind of ripped off.
The whole staff pitched, you know. The bullpen had some small struggles, but they pitched well enough to win, and they got literally zero help. Zero on the scoreboard from the offense. I mean,
against a guy named Colin McHugh, was that his name?
Colin McHugh. Nine strikeouts, zero walks, no runs, no earned runs. In a game, the guy has a 6+ ERA for his career. I mean, it's a young career, so his sample size is relatively small, but good Lord.
Yeah.
And, I mean, you know, we've gone on here and been mad and kind of ranted and raved about the Royals before, and I just don't even know if I have the energy anymore to do it. I mean, you heard, you know, Ned Yost got thrown out of the game on the 27th, the second game of the Houston Astros series, and he was obviously very frustrated. You know, today being the 28th, you heard a lot on the radio, a lot of the interviews they did post-game last night, pre-game today. And the thing that bothered me the most about what I've been hearing today and what I kind of heard yesterday and what you've been kind of hearing for about a week is, I guess there are a couple things, but they all kind of come back to the same point. But, you know, they keep throwing a lot of these phrases, you know, like Ned Yost just, you know, I'm not concerned. Like people ask him, well, are you concerned about the lack of power on this team? No, I'm not concerned. You know, if you watch this team hit in batting practice, in before the games, you know they've got some power. We just need to do it in the games. Yeah, well, you know, I look pretty good on the driving range when I'm out there. But when I got trees on both sides of me and I got to get over a sand trap and maybe some water, things are a little bit different. So, yeah. You know, and it's just – and you hear that, you know, like it'll come, he'll be fine. And I honestly you give an organization the benefit of the doubt because they have to say something to the media and you don't think that they can truly believe that, you know, they just snap their fingers and magic baseballness just happens and all of a sudden players turn good and it does turn out that so-and-so is all right. And it always brings me back to when the Chiefs were on Hard Knocks and Herm Edwards was the coach, and they had drafted this guy, Justin Medlock, as a kicker in the seventh round, and he was in the preseason game. He missed three field goals in one game. And so the one episode was in between that game and the next game, and Herm Edwards kept saying, oh, he's going to be fine. The kid's going to be fine. He's going to be fine. He's going to be fine. And all the while, they never – obviously, they edited a ton of stuff out of these practices, but you never saw him really working with the kicker or diagnosing what his problem was. Well, you know, a few weeks later, they ended up cutting him, so he wasn't fine. And that's just that's the feeling I get here, is that you get – the Royals just keep saying this stuff, and – I really feel like they truly don't know what the problem is. And that's the problem. That's their job, to know what the problem is. And they don't. And it seems like they don't have any interest in putting in the time to figure it out. And then that kind of cascades down, and Hosmer and Moustakas and those guys have a problem at the plate. And they don't want to put in the time because people above them aren't putting in the time to help them out. And it just, that's what it feels like. I have no knowledge that this is what's actually going on, but to me, that's what it feels like. Mm-hmm. Because I've been in organizations, you know, whether it's business, whether it's, you know, extracurricular in schools or whatever, that have had their issues, and they're similar to that. And it's just like, you know, it's tough. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, it'd be nice. I don't expect them to be like, yeah, nobody can hit right now. But all you have to do is say, hey, we're looking at video, we're doing what we can, we're talking to coaches, and we're coming up with plans to get better. That's exactly all you have to say. That's fine. I will accept that, because you're not trying to sell me on some mystic idea that you can just hope your way to get better. I mean, it's like that quote that Dayton had a couple years ago, where he's like, we're going to continue it and get better every day, and then we're going to wake up, and one day we'll be good. Well, it doesn't work that way. And nope. We already know that Moustakas really hasn't been much of a video guy. I think some personal habits and fitness have been in question. And now he's in the minors because he's been worse every year since he came up in 2011. So there's a direct consequence on the field and in where he's assigned, because he's not putting in the effort to get better. But then when you also have guys like Alex Gordon and Billy Butler who have a track record of success, you know, two all-star hitters, two centerpieces of the lineup, and they're struggling as well. Well, that's an issue of its own, because now you've got guys who you expect to be good who aren't good, and you got to find a way to get them going as well. And it doesn't seem like there's a whole lot of concern. Like you said, you know, they're not really trying to find it out, or at least they're publicly not saying it. Maybe they might be panicking behind the scenes, but you know, they're not giving the impression that they're working on anything, because they're also not giving the impression that they need to work on anything. And that's an even bigger problem, if that's what they truly believe, because this team is dead last in homers. And the other problem is that they don't get on base enough to compensate for that. I mean, the Giants, the Cardinals, we talked about this a couple weeks ago. They've gotten on base in their history enough to get into the World Series without being, you know, a big home run hitting team. And the Royals don't have that. I mean, they have pitching most of the time, and they have defense, and that's it. And that's pretty much all they have. And this year, even the batting average isn't there for most of these guys. So you get into a situation where, you know, you're fighting to keep Moustakas up because you don't have any other options. You've got Eric Hosmer, and all you can really do is send him down the order like they did today, where they batted him fifth. You know, they don't seem to have an answer for anything, and there's not much help on the way, and it doesn't seem like there's a plan to get better at it either. So it's really frustrating. I don't think anybody expected the offense to be, you know, Detroit Tigers in 2009 or whatever year they were supposed to score 1,000 runs. But I don't think anybody expected them to be this bad either. But the Royals seem like they didn't have an idea on how to, like, they didn't have a contingency plan, if that was the case. And so now they're just wallowing because they can't hit, and they're not getting on base, and they're not swinging at good pitches. And right now, I don't feel like there's a single batter in the lineup that any pitcher should be afraid to throw one right down the middle to, because they're not going to hit it out. And I just don't feel confident in pretty much anybody going to the plate right now. And that's a really frustrating spot to be in when you got nine guys going up there and you don't feel like any one of them is going to get a hit.
And, you know, I mean, I think that's an excellent point. There's absolutely nobody. And I actually heard on the way home, Josh Vernier was doing kind of the post game show when I was driving home, and he was saying that he talks to opposing pitchers, opposing managers, and whoever, and the overall consensus opinion or consensus feeling that he gets from them is they're not afraid to pitch to anybody. And it doesn't matter it doesn't matter that they're not afraid, because they're not going to throw strikes because they know they don't have to. Like, they know the book is out on the Royals. And I've said it, we talked about it on this show a couple times before. And, you know, not only just this season, but in previous seasons, like, you have Hosmer and everybody's guilty, Gordon, Butler, whoever, you know, that low and away, the out of the strike zone, down low. I mean, they're just fishing for these awful pitches. And it's nothing new. It's been the last two decades it's been like that in this freaking town for this club. And it's like, it's just so disconcerting, because not only is it a problem, but the Royals just don't see it. And they preach and they preach and they preach, we want better plate discipline, we want better plate discipline. Well, we have absolutely zero, precisely zero evidence that they're truly preaching this and truly working on the plate approach of these players, other than that's what they're saying to the media. I mean, it doesn't show up in the stat line. It doesn't show up in the walk rate. It doesn't show up in their on-base percentage. It doesn't show up anywhere to give you actual concrete evidence to say that. It gets worse. Like, it's gotten worse to see them flailing at those 73-mile-an-hour curveballs from Colin McHugh the other night. It just makes it seem even – it looks like it's even worse. So this idea that they're really something they're striving for, I don't buy it, because I don't see it. You know, and this isn't, you know, stat geek Jeff up here saying, oh, you know, their on base percentage is low, even though it is. But it's just me watching games with my eyes and saying, this team looks like a little league team. And they're just hacking away. And I think some of it, maybe they're pressing, some of it, maybe they're getting frustrated. But God, it's awful. And I want to bring this quote up here. Near the beginning of May, the Royals and the Cardinals were in close to the same position here, and the Royals were 19-19, and the Cardinals were 19-20. And here's a quote from the Cardinals GM John Mozeliak. This is the Cardinals who were in the World Series last year, and in the NLCS the year before, and then won the World Series the year before that. So. Just to put that into perspective, but he said, this is John Mozeliak, GM of the Cardinals, about his team that was 19-20 at this point, which is for the Royals, obviously. I mean, we're throwing a parade if they're 19-20 after 39 games, but the Cardinals, that's unacceptable. So he says, I still think this is a talented club and I still believe in it. Okay, that's something Dayton Moore would say, you know, that sounds right. But then he qualifies it and says, but having a belief in something is far different than actually getting it done. I think right now it's early in the season where you can't hit the panic button, but you've got to see the trend line change a little bit. I think the 19-20 record reflects how we've played, certainly. So, I mean, there you have a GM that is, you know, recognizes that there's a problem, and he obviously says he's going to have something. He's working, you get the feeling that he's working towards trying to fix it. Whereas Dayton Moore goes out in the media and says things like, you know, I like where we are right now, when the team was, you know, were they 21-21 or something, you know, they were right around 500 because they've basically been there all season. So it's just a kind of a small thing that really shows the magnified difference in a super successful, well-run organization like the Cardinals and a crappy losing organization like the Royals. I mean, I'm a fan of this team, and it hurts me to say it like that, but I don't know any other way to say it at this point. So, I mean, I feel like we're kind of beating a dead horse only because we've been having the same conversation for 20 years or whatever, but, you know, whatever. I think at this point now, Mike and I, it kind of feels good. We got that off our chest a little bit. You know, I'm feeling a little bit better. So we got to expunge some of those bad feelings. And nothing better than when you're feeling some joy to bring in someone like Kevin Scobie, who is a guest that we're going to have when we come up after we take this short break here. There's been some developments with Yordano Ventura and Kyle Zimmer in terms of pitching injuries that they've suffered and how serious are they, how not serious are they. And something that I was going to mention earlier that I didn't, that I guarantee Kevin is going to have quite a bit to say about it, is the Dayton Moore's quote saying Yordano Ventura needs to learn to throw slower, throw lighter earlier in the game, more in the 92-93 range, and not try and overpower it in the 98-100 range and save that until when he absolutely needs it. And then Dave Island came out, that's the Royals pitching coach, came out and said, basically in opposition to his GM, that puts Yordano Ventura at greater injury risk. So I think I know which way Kevin Scobie leans in that argument. Mm-hmm. And we're going to find out, and you're all going to find out when we come back with a guest here on the Kansas City Baseball Vault, back on the other side with Kevin Scobie.
Come to Spit Cup this week. We'll let the person who has the highest bar tab ride the bull. We don't have any TVs in our bar, but we make our own entertainment. Mondays, it's free cover charge to anybody with a gun rack in their pickup truck. Tuesdays, we've got $8 beer night. All domestic beers are on special for only $8. It's Spit Cup. Wednesdays is longest tobacco spit. Thursdays is foot fungus night. Friday night is jamboree night. Bring your crap kick in your 10-gallon hats. And this weekend, you get our world-famous Spit Cup girls. You get to pick which one has the most teeth. It's Spit Cup. No love letters, talking to the wall. Or you could go to Kelly's Westport Inn. The highest quality drinks with the lowest prices. You know what we do. Drinks, friends, plenty of TV showing sports. They've got all the basketball and all the baseball on. Live music on the weekends. The best pizza in Kansas City and fun. Kelly's has the best rooftop patio in town and is voted one of the best places in Kansas City to check out the view, if you know what I mean, and maybe make a new friend. Make the best choice for your evening entertainment, Kelly's Westport Inn. Kelly's is at 500 Westport Road in Kansas City, Missouri. Kelly's Westport Inn. Tell them the Royal Man Report sent you.
And welcome back into the Kansas City Baseball Vault. I'd like to say this segment is going to be a little bit happier, a little bit more chipper than our first, but then I'd probably be lying. Mm-hmm. So we have brought in our extra special guest, Kevin Scobie, to talk about some things here. Kevin, how are you doing tonight?
I was going to say not bad, but then I almost caught myself. I'm a Royals fan, so I'm fine, I guess.
That about sums it up. Well, if you're listening to Ned Yost, then we'll all be fine. It's no big deal. Everything will just... We'll just wake up one day and be proud of it.
I'm not concerned.
I'm not concerned at all. If you could see us on Twitter, you would know that we have some great Royals fandom.
My drafts folder is excellent.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right. And none of us have ever been wrong. So we've got that going
ever.
For us,
too.
True.
30 years. I haven't even been alive for that long. But, you know, whatever. So I guess we'll just kind of jump in here. We've got a couple different areas we can start, but we'll start with the kind of meatiest, juiciest one we kind of teased before the break here, Kevin, before you came on. So this week, Yordano Ventura, he gets injured on Memorial Day. He leaves the game, some elbow issue, and obviously everyone in Royals fandom's hearts skip a beat. I mean, he didn't look right the whole game. I was kind of in and out on the game. I wasn't able to watch the whole thing, but he didn't look right. Gave up a lot of runs. Things weren't going well. Came out of the game. But Ned Yost absolutely 100% was not concerned that it was a UCL. He was a little concerned about the injury, but he said, it's on the outside of the elbow. It's on the outside. It doesn't matter. Or, you know, it's not a UCL. He'll be fine. So they ran the MRI the next day, and it turns out, believe it or not, Ned Yost actually was somewhat right. He had some, there's no, he didn't have any pain, and he's just going to miss one start at this point. Now, is this a precursor of things to come? Who knows? You know, rarely do you see a pitcher get an elbow injury, leave the game, have an MRI, and it comes back positive and there's nothing wrong. So maybe this turns him into a ticking time bomb. Maybe every pitcher's a ticking time bomb anyway. I don't know. But afterwards, now that once that all kind of got hashed out, Dayton Moore was quoted as saying, you know, he thinks that, I don't have the exact quote, but to paraphrase, basically, Yordano Ventura needs to learn to take something off his fastball in the early games and sit more in that 92-93 range and then only jump up to that 98-100 range when he absolutely needs to. Then, shortly after, Dave Island comes out, the Royals pitching coach, and says, I honestly think that that would put him at a little bit more of a risk for injury. So for those that haven't heard Kevin on this show before, he was a pitcher, pitched in college. He had a lot of experience not only with pitching yourself, but in coaching pitching and coaching baseball in general. So when with your knowledge and just experience with pitching and the dynamics of how the arm works and everything, when you hear those quotes from Dayton Moore and, you know, trying to dial something back and kind of playing with that a little bit, I mean, what's the immediate thought that jumps to your head?
That is a hilarious misunderstanding of how the body functions and how an athlete throws a baseball.
All right. That was pretty succinct. So
I guess a couple things to it is that, if his point was to take a, and I think I said this the other day on Twitter too, if his point was to take a 98 to 100 mile an hour thrower and to have him gear back to 95, I could be semi on board with that. It wouldn't accomplish what he's trying to make it accomplish, and it wouldn't, his end result, he's going about it all the wrong way. But his idea that you can take a 98 to 100 mile an hour thrower and have that person and have that athlete purposely take off 6 miles an hour on a fastball would absolutely throw everything out of whack, arm speed out of whack, the way that the trunk twists and rotates through release, how quickly the hips actually open, how much the hips and shoulders separate, how much strain you're going to put on the front shoulder because it's closed in when it shouldn't be closed in. All these different things play a part in that. The reason why Ventura can throw as hard as he does is because his sequencing is near perfect. And that's the only way you can throw 100 miles an hour, unless you're just gifted with an incredible arm.
When you say sequencing, what do you mean by that?
When he gets into his kick, and you can see it a little bit whenever they show third base angle camera views, there's a lot of guys that are taught to stay tall on the mound, and that's the first thing that's incorrect. So the way his hips slide into his leg plant, into foot strike, he's gaining that sort of that tension to be able to unwind when it hits the ground. I'm trying to kind of explain this in ways that it's...
It'd like, probably be easier if you had like a video here, but yeah, we'll do the best we can.
And so it's the way that everything kind of fires, as the body moves along, there's the kinetic energy chain as it moves on up the body. So if you're staying back on the mound and then trying to explode all at once, what you're doing is you're holding back your athleticism, but also you're putting your hips into a very strict movement space where you want them to actually move freely. Whenever guys talk about how velocity comes from the legs, it doesn't. It comes from the arm. And so anything you can do to allow the arm to move easy and easier into release, that's what you're trying to do. When you stay back, you actually force the arm to do more work. As you move your momentum and you allow the trunk to basically do most of the work, which is what happens when you slide a little forward, when you hit foot strike and the hips open just a little bit and it kind of recoils everything into release, that's whenever all the strain is taken off the arm. Not all the strain, but most of the strain is taken off the arm. When you're trying to tell guys to take velocity off, when it's more than something that's a couple miles an hour, which is just sort of random variation of fastball velocities, when you're telling them to gear back that much, you force them into it's a natural occurrence. You force them into a slower movement. You force them into staying back longer, to not exploding out of the break as they usually do. And it opens up far more room for error then. And it's you can't take an athlete who has been used to moving at one speed, at one dynamics, and saying, oh, by the way, now you have to reduce it to 80%. I know there's going to be a lot of people who will say, well, Verlander does that. No, he doesn't, and he never did. Verlander never went from 89 to 91 to 98 late in the games. That's a hilarious myth. It never happened that way, and it couldn't happen that way, unless you're talking about, you know, hard changeups or two-seamers. No pitcher can purposely take off 8 miles an hour and not have it either dramatically affect and negatively affect his other pitches or dramatically affect his health. It doesn't work that way.
So in this case, if you're talking about a perfect kinetic chain that Ventura, or near perfect, it's a motion that's going to take less strain than maybe it could on the elbow. Is that pretty clear? I mean, he's going to throw hard. And I think Dr. James Andrews had something today that he actually published that said, you know, there's a correlation between the higher velocity guys having more of these UCL injuries, but you know, there are other guys that don't get hurt and still throw 95 plus.
Right.
So if you have the right motion to do that, you can still avoid it because everything else is sound. And so in that case, I mean, I would imagine you're siding with Dave Island completely on this topic. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think a lot of it has to do with maybe because he's the guy that's actually doing the training of the athlete. And so he kind of gets to know them day to day, what they're capable of, what they're not capable of, and all that. Two things to that point, which you just made, is that while, yeah, higher velocity throwers are more prone to this kind of injury, and I thought about this on my drive home tonight because I was listening to a podcast of the local radio guys spewing a bunch of nonsense and ignorance about pitching mechanics, is that the notion or the thought that, well, he's 5'10", 180, he can't throw that hard. Why? I want to know the scientific research behind that comment. Two, this doesn't prove anything. This injury doesn't prove anything. There's the quote that he gave to Vernier in January about how he was going to take 2 to 3 months off throwing in the winter so he could throw 200 innings. That quote there proves this injury more than anything about his height or his velocity does. Because essentially what he did is, I live in Denver now, and if, let's say, I wanted to drive to Kansas City tonight, and that's a 9-hour drive, and I didn't put any gas in my car before I left. Well, I broke down in Salina, and I ran out of gas.
And you don't want to break down in Salina.
Right. I don't get to stand up and pat myself on the back and go, well, my car just can't make it to Kansas City. Well, no, I didn't take care of my car correctly.
Mm-hmm.
That's what Ventura did. And this was sort of, there's a causation correlation problem here where, well, he's small, therefore this is always going to happen. We don't know. We don't know what his body is capable of. The piece that Will Carroll wrote a couple of days ago at Bleacher Report, he posted it a couple of days ago, and if it was older or if he just happened to actually write it yesterday, Monday. But he said that we don't know how much strain each individual athlete can take. And we really don't. What we can do is try and prepare them as best as possible. One thing that I've known, and I've gotten a lot of texts and emails from people that have connections or know of what's going on in the Royals development system, is that the way that they take care of their arms, the idea of what Ventura said, he would take a couple months off from throwing, that's pervasive. That's not just him. It's either an organizational directive or it's been passed down to him. They still restrict throwing to 120 feet. Only when a player shows significant decrease in velocity and comes to them and says, I want to throw my long toss again, do they allow them to throw a long toss. And this is coming from a couple of different sources in the last 2 days, direct sources in the last couple of days. This is not a Ventura, oh, he can't handle the velocities. One of the big things that comes with throwing is your in-between work and your recovery. And it's actually usually a lot of times it's more important. So you're throwing, you're in between start throwing, while important, because it does build up arm strength. The things that you're going to do to keep your arm healthy, little things like throwing a baseball backwards to be able to train your deceleration muscles, those kinds of things, which I don't know if they're being done or not, my assumption, knowing everything else I know about this organization, is that they're not. If he's not doing those things, if he's not lifting correctly, if he's not lifting heavy to be able to build the muscles around the joints necessary, then this was bound to happen regardless. And I think we've talked about this before, is that it's the warning signs throughout the organization as a whole, the things that they value, are what led to this. It's not necessarily the athlete himself.
Okay, and then the other, I mean, Kyle Zimmer, pretty much the same day, came up that they're shutting him down. And this is something where Zimmer was drafted. They knew he had bone chips. They took care of that. You know, and I don't think anybody was concerned about that. But then over the winter, he had shoulder tightness and I think tendonitis and some other issues. And now, as he makes his first extended spring training start, he comes up with some back tightness, and it turns into a lat problem. And now they're shutting him down for 6 to 8 weeks before he'll even throw, like, play catch again. So, I mean, is this another symptom of the organization and their approach? Is this some kind of change with Zimmer's throwing program between San Francisco and being drafted by the Royals? Or is this also part of just Kyle Zimmer and his body somewhat being prone to these kind of things just naturally?
Well, the lat worries me. And a lot of times, because that points more to shoulder issues than anything else, or scapula issues. Whether it is an overtraining of the area or an undertraining of the area, there's a lot of stress being put on there, which usually would tend to lead back more towards the scapula. If that's the case, I can't stress enough how just sort of crazy it is that a pitcher now would develop shoulder pain or shoulder issues, because shoulder issues have pretty much been taken care of in the past 5 years. Like, no guys have shoulder issues anymore. We figured out enough about the shoulder joint to where we can actually train around this. You know, pet your dog there, Jeff?
Yeah, I just did. They were barking earlier, so you're lucky you don't have to deal with that.
So shoulder pain, that's one of those things. I mean, obviously it's not shoulder pain yet, but that's one of the things that's usually a precursor towards that.
Mm.
That's an odd one, because that makes you go, what are you guys doing? What have you guys done with this training to make it have a shoulder pain? Because if you read, Kyle Bodie actually posted something last night and basically said this, is that we've pretty much figured out, or not figured out, because you're never really going to completely figure it out, but the amount and the ratio of shoulder injuries has greatly reduced, because that's the part of the arm that we've targeted, and we can actually train the scapula a little better now. It's the elbow that's given all the problems. So if the Royals are having a guy that's having a lat pain, which usually would correspond to shoulder, it's worrisome, because it's what are you guys doing down there? And it's also one of the things too, and I thought about this a second ago when you asked the first question, Mike, was that the MRI came back negative or positive, whichever one's the good. that it's more of like a tennis elbow. One thing I would want to know is that if they have said now that, well, they want him cutting off his velocity 6 to 8 miles an hour early in the game, is that an effort to keep him healthy because they found something more in the elbow than they were releasing?
Mm-hmm.
And if he is overcompensating, and what it sounds like too, a lot of the tennis elbow things is actually it's an issue with your ability to decelerate after release. And when Yo said, you know, it's the banging of the elbow, that's true. It is. It's that's when you pronate after release on a fastball like that, it would tend to you would hyperextend your elbow basically, and that's how you get tennis elbow. Well, the issues with that comes with because you're not getting proper deceleration training, and your arm's not able to take the force necessary to slow your arm down. And that's where a lot of his recoil comes from, is whenever he does release the ball and you see him kind of pop back up, that's a little bit of his body trying to compensate for the fact that his arm isn't strong enough to withstand the force that he's having to do to release the ball. So if that's the case, and they're basically just saying, hey, throw softer, my concern then would be to, you found something else in the MRI that you just don't want to say at this point, and you're trying to mask that in some way. In order to mask that in some way, it'd be just throw softer.
So we've kind of talked about this before, but just, you know, in case some people didn't happen to hear that episode or something, can you kind of go over like where did this all start? Like this idea that the Royals, you know, this 120 feet designation, like it comes from somewhere, and all these different restrictions the Royals, and you know, the Royals aren't the only ones. They're a dying breed in terms of the restrictions they place on their pitchers, but there are other organizations that are bad like the Royals, but they also lose like the Royals. Anyway, it's like, where does that all come from? Where does this, your first comment, you know, just a horrible understanding of how the arm works and how the pitcher's athleticism works. I mean, this guy, Dayton Moore, made those comments, and he's the general manager of a Major League Baseball team. You know, like, so where does it start to get to the point where Dayton Moore is the head of a baseball team for 8 years, and he's beholden to these ideals that just seem to be nonsensical?
So this is one of the hard things that I have to understand, is that whenever I was growing up, and even when I was, you know, high school, college, when I was coached by guys who really were kind of behind the evolution of the science of things, and it wasn't until I was 23, 24 and out of school when I learned what was going on. I did some research on my own, and I learned all these the Ron Wolforth program and then Alan Yeager programs and stuff like that. That's when I really started to gain velocity and figure things out. But all through high school and college, I always threw long toss. And so I'm not sure where the 120 feet thing came from. You'll see a lot of people now that will write posts and will do what they consider studies. The angle of release of where you are on the mound and how that differs from the angle that you have to do in order to throw a long toss the ball 300 feet, and how vastly different it is. And yeah, it's a different angle that you're putting your shoulders to, but you're taking like a little bit of that. I mean, it's almost like a straw man argument. You're taking this little piece of information when what we're trying to do is strengthen the arm over here on the long toss side. What happens on a mound is mostly irrelevant. Think about it in terms of playing golf and a golf swing, is that you practice a lot so you can get your swing down. But what happens when you're on the course, a lot of it gets kind of thrown out the window because your swing could be crap that day and you could still succeed. You're really just trying to compete at that point. So what we're trying to do with long toss and with flat ground work and all the drills is to make sure that your base of information in your body kinetics is correct, so when you do at the mound, it translates. So taking that little bit of like, oh, the angle's different, it's missing the entire picture. With the Royals, I think they feel like, well, one, we can't teach velocity and we can't increase velocity in a pitcher, which is false. And I think, two, it's the feeling that you only have so many bullets in your arm, which is also false. That if we do happen to throw 350 feet a long toss and then you're out there for 45 minutes going, that will in some way limit how many times or how many pitches you have on a game mound. And we can't have that because, well, we're paying you a lot of money and we have an investment in you and we need you on the mound. Those two things are not mutually exclusive. They don't have really much to do with one another. You can't say, well, you're throwing a lot over here, so then you can't throw over here. And that's not how it works.
And wasn't that part of the reason why a lot of teams were scared of someone like Trevor Bauer? Like, wasn't he one of the, I mean, he wants to throw like 100 pitches just to warm up before he starts that day or something like that. I mean, wasn't that kind of an issue with teams being scared for that reasons like that?
Right. And Bauer has a genius level IQ. And the one thing that athletics in general, and especially baseball and minor league coaches, don't like is smart people. And Bauer is probably the smartest person that's ever walked into a minor league field. The thing with Bauer is that he has trained his body to be that way. I don't remember who it was. If Mike, if you jumped on board a couple nights ago on Twitter, and somebody asked me about, well, a guy can't throw at his 100% velocity for 7 innings. And I remember you were Leski, and said, basically it's, well, sure he can, because he has to train for it. And that's exactly right. It's, these guys aren't trained to throw at that velocity for 60 pitches out of 100 in a game, because there's a fear that, well, if you do throw hard, then you won't have command. And if you don't have command, you won't go into deep into games, which is also false, because the harder you throw, the more swings and misses you get, which means the later in the games you pitch. But yeah, the idea that like the harder you throw, well, then you're obviously going to wear out sooner. No, it's not. That's not true. And Bauer's a prime example. He's been sitting at 97 of the last few starts. Yeah, he only goes 4 or 5 innings just because his command isn't very good right now, and those things haven't figured out. But it's not a matter of stamina for him. He trains himself to – he prepares himself to be that way with his throwing program, with his lifting program, with his recovery program. All of it really is just a science, and if you're not taking care of the things scientifically that you should be taking care of, then obviously your performance is going to wane, and you're going to use that as your result. It's – the Royals in general are a results-based organization, which is ironic considering they're all about their process. The process is terrible, and all they care about is the results. You spend all your time worrying about the results, and you forget about the process.
And they both suck.
Yeah.
Right, exactly.
So at this point, the Royals kind of are where they are. But from a standpoint of, you know, development, and we've, you know, like take someone like Danny Duffy or even Yordano Ventura, who have been in the Royals system for quite a while now. Like, is it something where... Because, I mean, the Royals just seem to just wreck pitchers, right? Like, Mike Montgomery is my favorite example. I bring him up. I say favorite, not just because, like, I was a huge fan of his. I talked about him on this show so much. And it seemed like the Royals just destroyed him. And, you know, I kind of heard as much from people who knew, who had, you know, talked to Mike and some of the people around him. And it's just unfortunate because he was a truly talented player. But is it something where, like... If the Royals were to change their ways, can the pitchers kind of get back? Like, can they kind of train themselves back? Or when you start going down that road, like a Zimmer, or if the elbow kind of blows up on Yordano Ventura, figuratively speaking, you know, is it just kind of like, well, they've destroyed somebody else, and it's the end. You have to move on.
No, I think there's always opportunity to change. Greg Schaumann and I actually talked about this one time about. I got told by a Royal scout that you couldn't change arm action. A player was born with the way he threw, and that's just the way he threw. Hilarious now that was from a Royal scout, and that's not true at all. And the reason why I know that is because I changed my arm action, and I've coached kids and trained kids to change their arm action as well. And a lot of it would take time. It would be really difficult to do it in season. But at this point, I mean, they're in such a tough spot now, and this is obviously I don't think he's a very good general manager, and I think the group of us were really kind of the first few years ago just kind of said, you know what, the things this guy and the things this organization as a whole value above others aren't things that the industry is leaning towards now, and this has been going on for a couple of years. So from them to change now, I don't think they could do it, and I don't think they would do it. But also, it's they at this point, in order to go back and completely overhaul their entire development system, from their perspective, I don't think they could do it, because they've gotten mediocre results, but enough results to sort of dangle that carrot. That if they did change everything now, and it took, I don't know, a year to 2 years to get all their pitchers back up to speed, all their hitters too, to change all their swings from the nonsense I can only imagine they're teaching their players now, that it would take time, because the motor skills of the athletes would fight it, just because that's just how it works. And then it would take a couple months to kind of get everything back into sync and build back up again. So from their perspective, it would take a regime change in order to change everything the way it is, because they cannot afford, well, unless Dayton Moore really does have sort of a golden parachute and he can be the general manager as long as he wants to be. But if he's got, what, a year left on his contract, he's signed through 15, right? So he's got pretty much this year and next year. And if they completely change their development now, it wouldn't turn around in time for him. And so he can't afford to do that.
So he's not going to bother.
I wouldn't think so. I mean, not to say that he wouldn't bother anyway, because I don't think they're doing anything wrong. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
And that's almost the worst part. And we talked about a little bit about that earlier, where like the Royals just kind of have this, well, it'll get better type of feeling. And they don't know, they don't understand that what they're doing is wrong. And it's like, how do you get to that point? How do you lose so many games like they've lost, and, you know, just see all the horrible failures that they've seen and still not think, that's what just boggles my mind. Like when I, you know, if you do something repeatedly, at some point you just say, you know, okay, I got to get better at this. And when do you give up on these old philosophies that haven't worked for you? I just don't understand it.
Right. And it's from a fan's perspective too. And the organization itself is probably doing the same thing as like, well, we won 86 games last year. Great. Good for you. I'm glad that you did. The Indians won 92 and the Indians were worse than you the year before. So what, I don't understand what that has anything to do with anything. Yeah, I completely agree with you. Is it how is it that an organization that has lost as much as they have in the last 8 years, and ignore what's happened for the past since 1986? It's, obviously, it's, we can hold that against the organization as an entity, but we can't hold it against Dayton Moore. But hasn't he had enough time in 8 years? And it's, well, the farm system was bare when he took over. I don't care. He still spent $36 million on Jose Guillen, and he still acquired Unieski Betancourt twice. The things that they have done shine a bigger light on what it is that they would do going forward than anything they're doing now.
He paid $55 million for Gilmesh, which actually wasn't that bad until he let Trey Hillman destroy him at 140 pitches a night.
The frustrating thing is, I think, actually, you guys, I might have been on last year about this time, and I think we probably had around the same conversation. It was, this is incredible. I mean, what? How does this happen? And they all, and well, they turned it around, I guess, in terms of the win-loss record. Their offense was still historically bad. And if they would have, I think I did the research on this like in November or whenever it was, that if they happened to go to the playoffs last year, only three teams in the last 25 years would have made the playoffs with a worse offense. So the things that they're doing, yeah, we're basing everything around pitching and defense. No, what you're basing it off of is luck. You're basing on everything breaking correctly because your team is so completely one-sided. You pretty much have ignored one complete facet of your team. And now that Ventura is hurt, I mean, really, the only opportunity that they had to compete and to get late in the season was that Ventura had to be a star. He had to be because you only have James Shields. I mean, if you think Guthrie is going to continue to throw seven shutout innings like he did the other day, I got news for you. That's not going to happen. So it is frustrating because there's always going to be that little kernel of hope because, well, they did it last year. Like, I guess, yeah. I mean, but if I always use the outlier to make my arguments for everything, I'd be a terrible person at arguing things.
And we all know that's not the case.
Right. I just get angry and throw things.
that's the man way to argue is what that is.
That's pretty much what it's been all week. Just throwing things. And now yeah. I'm just tired.
I know. We were talking about this before you came on, Kev. It's like, we've ranted and raved on this show for multiple times over the last few years. And I don't even know that I feel like it anymore. It's just so... just so beaten down by this franchise.
You just got to laugh at it. at Mike Moustakas in the minors and Eric Hosmer hitting singles. And
right. Let's talk about the Moustakas thing for a second. So he's been one of the worst hitters in baseball.
Yeah.
Since he was brought up to major leagues. And it took 1,600 at-bats to put him in AAA, to send him back down. And all this talk about how he was the star hitter and he was a star player. As he moved up the chain, as he moved lighter in the minor leagues, there were a lot of red flags about him. I think I remember Keith Law dropped him to like 70th or something like that in his top 100 rankings when he was in AAA. There was a lot being said. It was like, this guy swings and misses a lot. He doesn't walk at all. If he hits one, if he connects with one, if he squares one up, great. But that's not the case. And he's not really dominating AAA pitching the way he should. He didn't dominate AAA pitching the way Johnny Giovitella did.
No.
So where is it? And I think it's funny now where people say, well, we're just going to send him back to AAA so we can find himself. No, this is himself.
Find somebody.
Right. It's not going to get any better. And one of the things that I was working on to write about, which of course I never got around to doing, but it's in my head. I was watching, it might have been 10 days ago. I think it was right as Butler started to actually hit drive the ball again. I forget who it was against, but he hit a double off the wall in left center and home. And Hudler, on his little telestrator thing, they had a side view of the swing path that Butler had.
Mm.
And Hudler drew basically a V. You got to swing down on the ball, and you got to swing up on the ball. And he drew a V on the screen. And I thought, now, if this is just sort of Hudler's thing and this is what he's doing, which is entirely possible, then this doesn't really mean anything.
Mm-hmm.
But I got to think there's a kernel of truth to what the Royals are teaching hitters. And you've heard them a couple of times. I got to swing down on a ball to create backspin. That is, in terms of science, physically impossible. The amount of perfection you have to hit a ball in order to swing down on it and create backspin and loft is, what, 1/100th of a millimeter? This isn't golf. You're not trying to hit a stationary target. You're trying to hit a 95-mile-an-hour fastball. And the only way that the four outcomes, basically, of that kind of swing, we used to call it when I was coaching, sheathing the bat, like you're sheathing a sword. As soon as you get contact, you immediately go straight up and wrap around your back, which is exactly how Moustakas hits. It's, as soon as contact hits, it's immediately straight vertical and behind your back. And if the downswing is that dramatic as well, you're either going to hit a ton of ground balls. If you're early. Familiar. Yeah, if you're early, ton of ground balls, or you're going to catch it underneath it, and you're going to hit a lot of weak pop-ups.
Wait a minute. Hold on.
Hold on a second.
That sounds familiar.
Or, I've seen this play out before.
Right. If you catch it early and you catch it on the upswing, it's a lot of super high fly balls or lazy ground balls to your pull side. Those are the only two ways, the only four outcomes. If you happen to catch one exactly perfect, then yeah, you're going to hit a home run or two. But when you hit the home run, you're going to hit it with a ton of topspin. Watch Hosmer hit now. All of his doubles, ton of topspin. Watch Moustakas hit the home run the one in Houston he hit, which wasn't a home run because it's a little league field. And the one he hit at home in like the seventh or eighth inning, a lot of topspin. That's what that swing produces. I was talking to a guy that I used to coach with that he's now a rookie ball instructor with a major league team. He interviewed with the Royals, and he actually sees the Royals a lot in spring training and sort of their training complex down there. And you can probably figure it out who it is by if they're around the training complex together, what organization he's with. And he says he's seen them teach that, and they do teach a dramatic down on the ball to create the backspin. The follow-through is not so much taught so much, but they do teach a lot of top hands on the bat. And all the top hand on the bat does is it almost reinforces too much action with the top hand, and you actually pull over the ball, create a lot of ground balls, or you yank a lot of balls foul. The way you should swing is you drop the bat in the zone, kind of like a golf swing. You drop your elbow down and get your bat in the zone, and you stay through the ball as long as possible. You stay through the hitting zone as long as possible. That's how you create backspin. Backspin isn't created by the angle of contact. It's created by where the ball is contacted with the bat. If you keep the bat on playing with the pitch and you hit the underneath side of the ball, that's where topspin comes from. And it should be just the most fundamental no-duh thing. But yeah. In an effort to, I don't know if they're trying to create more home runs, and this is how they think they need to do it, because if you create topspin, naturally the ball flight will go farther. Yes, it will go farther. But if you're creating topspin and you're hitting the ball at a 80-degree angle up, it's not going any farther. And that's what they're doing.
Yeah, I've heard, last year we sent some of our little leaguers out there. They had like some kind of camp day or I don't remember what it was. I wasn't able to go to it. But what I heard back was they had John Mayberry doing some hitting lessons, and he was telling them to swing down on the ball. And so if Hudler's saying that, if Mayberry's teaching that there, I got to imagine that's an organizational thing. And if we see the results, I mean, they're one of the higher ground ball teams in baseball over the last 3 years. I don't think that's a coincidence, and so that's discouraging.
And so here's another question, Kevin. Just know from what you know about, you know, kind of the inner workings of baseball. Like, if you were someone like a Mike Moustakas or an Eric Hosmer, and or even, you know, a Johnny Giovitelli, you know, a lesser prospect or whatever, whoever it may be. If you're coming up and you hear these things, and even better example, let's say you're Trevor Bauer, where you know that what these coaches are telling you. I mean, is there you feel like seems reasonable to think that there'd just be a ton of pressure from the organization to do what they tell you. But I mean, is there ever a point, like, wouldn't you think a player would ever just be like, you know what, I'm just gonna do it my own way? I mean, does the organization lash out at you when you do that? Maybe do the Royals like say, oh no, you're swinging up on this ball and you're creating topspin, so you're gonna sit on the bench? I mean, I almost feel like at some point as a player, you'd be like, I'm tired of struggling, I'm just gonna do what works best for me, right? I mean,
yeah, but they're also in kind of a no-win situation there. I mean, the story about Bubba Starling and how he's fixed and he had a 15-game hitting streak with two extra base hits in that time.
Mm-hmm.
That he said he was doing that. He was going back to what he did in high school. The thing that, and a lot of things that I've heard was that from guys that I've coached and kind of worked with that are either in independent leagues or they're in the minor leagues, is that there is a lot of pressure to basically, it's my way or the highway. And where the guys that are the higher draft picks, they have a little more leeway to kind of do their things, but some of the, I don't want to say horror stories, it's kind of about the guys that I've heard that work with or have worked with guys in the Royal system, is that they very much have that feel to them. And it's gotten a little, back when Mike Montgomery was in the organization, it was a little worse. I think they've kind of relaxed that a little bit now, just because all the research that's available on certain things, especially like throwing programs, it'd be hard pressed to tell a kid now, especially with all these throwing factories that are popping up. All the Jaeger guys are all over the place now. All the Wolfers guys are all over the place. All of like Kyle Bodie's guys. These little pockets of throwing programs and development communities are putting more guys into professional baseball now. And if you drafted one of those guys and said, like Trevor Bauer, which is what Arizona did, you can't throw your long toss anymore. Well, the guy like Bauer, since he is the first through the wall, he's always going to take all the bullets, but he's also confident enough to go, no, I'm going to do it my way. That takes a special breed. And I think a lot of guys, I don't know if they feel like they could, and it'd be a tough spot for them. Because even in college, it's hard to tell your coach that you know more than him when you do,
mm-hmm.
whenever he's the guy that's, you know, he's the one that's doing all the teaching.
You remember that Bauer clip that we found like last year? That one coach talking about why not to throw like Trevor Bauer?
No, I wish I did remember that though, because I want to find that and laugh at it.
I'm going to find that. I'm going to post that on royalspodcast.com when I do this, just because I think it's hilarious. I think that guy was a riot. I hope it was satire, but I know it wasn't.
Trevor Bauer's 5'11 and there was 99 miles an hour.
Don't throw like that guy.
And he's as healthy as you could be, right? Yep, don't do that. The guy's 180 IQ and has spent his life researching biomechanics and body kinetics, but you don't want to go ahead and emulate what he does.
Tall and fall all day.
That's the other thing that I heard. Hold on, I know like we need to wrap up. Tall and fall is stupid, first of all.
What about pushing off the rubber?
That's
I'm going to throw all the cliches.
That's impossible. You cannot tell an athlete to do that because they can't consciously push, and it throws too many variables into the pitching motion. The one thing I heard on the radio too is going back to the sports radio fat mouth on the his idea was that, well, a guy that throws 5'10 and has this arm speed, and a guy that throws 7'1 and has the same arm speed, the guy that's 7'1 is going to throw faster because he's taller. No. Arm speed is arm speed. Arm speed produces velocity. Period. Over. And the second thing he said was, because the guy that's taller, he throws harder because it's like a merry-go-round. The further away from the center you get, the faster it goes. What?
No.
That's not how it works.
No.
Numerous studies have been done that actually taller pitchers at high velocity have more stress on the arm because their levers are longer. And so if there's one thing always, and I think Mike even told us about your kids, is that small levers open large doors. The shorter the arm action, the shorter the arm swing, the more velocity you're going to produce and the healthier you're going to be, because you keep the weighted object closer to your center. The further away from it gets, the more strain on the arm.
Yeah, it's just elementary physics. I mean,
yes,
that's
you would think.
Yeah. Then again, I'm guessing a lot of those guys probably weren't taking physics classes.
No, and then then the guy followed up and goes, well, I'm not a pitching coach. No kidding, you're not.
Yeah. You've made that plainly obvious. All right, well, with that, I think we'll probably wrap things up here. I'd like to Kevin, thanks for coming on. You've been, as always, incredibly informative. I hope if this is your first time hearing Kevin, you can follow him on Twitter at Scobes15, Scobes15 on Twitter. Drops a lot of good pitching knowledge, a lot of good baseball knowledge in general, and as much sarcasm as both of those combined. So if you like those three things, then
and Sorkin quotes. Good shape.
And Sorkin quotes, yes. Sometimes. So just can't,
ooh, yeah.
can't forget about that.
The new season of Newsroom starts next month, so
it's the final season for that. Right?
It is, yeah. Because I think I read that he's like burnt out. He doesn't want to do it anymore, which is completely selfish on his part.
Yeah, considering he could probably just hire people and just be like, okay,
that's what I'm saying. So they did with the last three seasons of West Wing. Yeah.
There you go. That's exactly what he did. I haven't gotten to that far yet. I'm actually just to that point. I started to watch the whole thing. So
what we should do next podcast. We should talk about the West Wing. People really want to listen to that.
Yes, it would be that would be much more enjoyable than talking about the Royals and their pitching and development deficiencies.
Probably.
So anyway, but thanks Kevin for coming on. Yeah, hopefully next week we have a little bit more happy things to talk about.
I'm not concerned.
I'm not. Mike's not concerned. So
we're gonna win 15 in the next 20. We're good.
Boom! It happened last year. It's gonna happen this year because that's how it works.
That's how it works. That's right.
So just like the Astros lost 111 games last year, so they should lose 111 this year. Three of which will not be against the Royals, as we know. But anyway, thanks for listening. If you have any feedback on the show, any questions that maybe you want Kevin to answer and on Twitter or something like that, or if we have him on again in another show later in the season, go ahead and drop us a line. Other than that, thanks for watching. For Michael Engel, I am Jeff Herr. This has been the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn. And thanks for listening. And as always, go Royals.
You have been listening to a Royals Podcast Network presentation.